Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Wednesday. News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you in the producer chair. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Wednesday afternoon football. Yeah. On NBC and also on 100.9 The Valley. Steelers and Ravens. Finally, a go. Yes, they will actually play the game today. But the Steelers did not get great news, as they found out just a little bit before kickoff, a little while ago, that Marquise Pouncey is now on the COVID list. So, quickly, the Steelers have to make those changes on the offensive line right away. So, we'll see how much that affects the Steelers in today's game. Of course, there's also no James Conner because of him testing positive for COVID-19 today. And what to make of this game, I have no clue. Probably going to be close because the last several games, I forget exactly how many, but the last several games these two teams have played, including a few weeks ago in Baltimore, it's been a 7 points or less type of game. And I would expect probably no nothing less, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers won by two possessions today. The only way Baltimore, I think, is going to keep themselves in this game, turnover free, and
you're just anxious to watch winning Pennsylvania football. Winning Pennsylvania football. That's what you want to see. Winning professional Pennsylvania football.
Well,
that's what you're anxious to watch.
It is refreshing, I'll say that. It is. But this is going to be very interesting today.
Let's see. Tua's out. Pouncey's out. Connor's out. The Ravens have out Jackson. I think the two running backs, Ingram, I guess could have made it. They're like in the border, but they're not going to play. So, I think the Ravens have, I believe, 14 guys out.
Yeah, I think that's about right, at least for starters, yeah.
And we've got Metallica just aching. Contractually, they're not obligated to play twice in this half hour. So, there you go. Yeah, aching for this. This will be fun. In fact, the NFL may start doing what the Mac does. Playing more Wednesday games. What do you think?
If you make it at night, sure. No, why the heck not? We're going to have Tuesday night football next week with the Ravens and Cowboys.
They don't want to play Week 18. I don't blame them. There was an article today, I want to say in the New York Daily News. I got to find this. Saying that the NFL needs to shut the season down. No, you know. It's the usual. Whatever. But I'd have to find it. Because we've already had the articles that Major League Baseball needed to shut down. Remember all those articles?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Ron. There was also an article in the summer. I'm not going to get into who wrote it because it is somebody I personally like and respect. But they're going through about if college football plays, how many college football players could die. Okay, we're in December. To my knowledge, while we have had obviously players miss games, and we've had games canceled. Maryland, Michigan is canceled this weekend. I don't know of anybody in college football that is hospitalized. Do you?
I do not, no.
I'm saying thank goodness. I'm not saying, hey, yeah, you're wrong. Yeah. I'm not. I'm just saying, I'm trying to be factual about this. Doesn't mean people. Yeah, I think it may be. Is it Kurt Streeter, New York Times? I think it's Kurt Streeter, New York Times, I think, wrote. Do we need football in America this badly? That's what he wrote. And he writes that the NFL's efforts to keep the season going are reaching heights of absurdity. Yes, we need joyful distractions in times of troubles, and yes, the NFL has long served that need more than any other American sport, but it's not worth it at this cost. Not with players and coaches and staff across the league getting infected with coronavirus by the dozens. Okay, now you do have players out today, but where are the dozens?
Yeah, that is definitely not accurate.
For example, if some players are out. When you're on the COVID-19 list, most times you're on the COVID-19 list because you had contact with somebody. Not that you have it. College football, as I've written, was foolish to move forward knowing teams would play in an environment that was impossible to control. Its schedule is full of games halted by the virus. You do realize that the Big Ten's had cancellations, but let me ask this question. You do realize on every weekend of the Big Ten season so far, a minimum of 12 teams have been available to play out of 14. You probably didn't realize that. I mean, Illinois didn't play last week, but they were available to play. It was Ohio State that had the problem. And Ohio State went back to practice on Monday. But 12 out of the 14 every weekend have been available to play, I believe, in the Big Ten. I mean, Wisconsin was available to play last weekend. It's Minnesota that couldn't. This weekend, it's Michigan that's got the problem, so Maryland can't. College basketball. Here's one for you. You know what the percentages of college basketball teams that are playing right now? 87%. 87% are playing. That means right now 13% are either shut down or on the pathway, have already announced dates as to when they're resuming. He writes, among the latest lowlights, a marquee game between the Ravens and Steelers scheduled for Thanksgiving Day, postponed to Sunday after several Ravens tested positive, including Lamar Jackson. League rescheduled the game, this time for Wednesday afternoon. Why not play at night, giving players who have barely practiced in recent days more time to prepare? Scheduling decision hinged on television, the league's cash cow. He wanted to stick with his plans to air a tree lighting ceremony at Rockefeller Center during a 2-hour primetime special. The Niners, of course, are now going to be playing in Phoenix. But Santa Clara County told them they can't play. State Farm Stadium is in Maricopa County, which has an average daily rate of 42.7 cases per 100,000 residents. Well above the alarming 29.5 in Santa Clara County. Now, of course, 42.7 cases per 100,000 means that there are 99,953 out of 100,000 that don't have it. Do I have my math right? Yeah.
We'll go with that.
But, I mean, okay, that's 42.7 out of 100,000 is not good. I get that part, okay? That's the, okay, because of hospital, because of hospital rates, okay? All right? I got that. But flip it around. 99,953 per 100,000 don't have it. Like I don't, I understand. That he'd write the article. I got that. That's fine. You can write whatever you want. That doesn't mean people have to sit here and say, okay, okay, great. Part of a good column is it thought-provoking? Like when a person runs a staff meeting, is it thought-provoking?
Well, that's true in this case.
So thought-provoking doesn't mean everybody has to agree. And I can understand why he wrote it, but I don't agree. And based on the ratings, you know how many people watched the Thanksgiving Day games?
And they were not great matchups.
The numbers were astronomical. It was the highest-rated Detroit Lions Thanksgiving Day game in years. And the Washington-Dallas game, you know, you're talking about 2-3-7 teams. Your rating was fabulous. People are looking for something. You know, the NFL is making the decision as a business. They made the decision as a business to play, and guess what? They have a unionized workforce. The unionized workforce has said yes. That with concessions, they're willing to go along with it. So again, I don't mind him writing the column because I think it's thought-provoking. Now, that doesn't mean because he wrote the article and it's thought-provoking, it doesn't mean I have to agree with all the thoughts.
But the other part that's also not accurate, Steve, that he failed to mention is, this is just with the NFL. College football is a different story. But with the NFL, you look at the Titans outbreak, you look what happened with the Ravens, you look what happened with a little bit with the Raiders here and there.
Yeah.
Those outbreaks wouldn't have happened, most likely, if people did what they were supposed to do under the protocols and followed the protocols. So in essence, teams that have followed the protocols, sure, I've had to put players on the COVID list here and there because of maybe an outside contact or contact tracing, whatever. But they've been fine.
Well, that was my point about baseball. The Marlins had a problem. The Cardinals had a problem. The other 28 didn't. Right?
Maybe exactly.
It was maybe a little bit with the Mets for a couple days. Remember that? But they had 28 out of the 30. Got through with no issue. I mean, the only reason the Phillies didn't play is because of the Marlins. The Phillies did not have a problem. They just had to wait it out. Same thing with the NFL. The NFL has had, to be honest with you, Tennessee had a problem. Obviously, what happened with Denver. But the NFL has not had a widespread, the Patriots have had a couple problems. But you got 32 teams out of 32. 29 haven't had a problem?
Right, but again, most of the teams that had a problem, again, with the Broncos, you didn't do what they were supposed to do. Guys weren't masking. People didn't report symptoms. Guys were practicing when they shouldn't have.
All the Broncos quarterbacks, by the way, could have played on Sunday, but they weren't cleared. They weren't sick. They just didn't follow protocols, and that's where they got. And they all got fined, by the way. They all did. All right, back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai. Boy, you can't ask for better product lines than that. And great deals, especially during this holiday season. And maybe pre-owned inventory is what fills your bill. Great selection there as well. All with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department that backs it all up. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Nate Bauer in a few moments from Blue White Illustrated. As we'll talk about basketball and football and a lot of football, and how to improve your short game. Now, today marks the 25th anniversary of the conference that really formed really the suit's philosophy on life and sales, the Southwest Conference.
Oh, man.
Between 1985 and 1988, 7 of the 9 schools were on probation. They do anything to win. They do anything to win, my kind of people. Today is the 25th anniversary of the last game of the old Southwest Conference. Infighting just crushed them. You're talking about 8 Texas schools and Arkansas. So what they had Texas, Texas A&M, SMU, TCU, Texas Tech, Baylor, Houston, and Rice. And then the 9th one was Arkansas. They had an old rule that when you went on the road, you got $175,000. Well, Arkansas, now contrary to what fans understand today, they see Arkansas as a down-and-out program. They have a very passionate fan base. Arkansas, especially in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, man, they would travel. So when they went, they could take over stadiums. And so their complaint was, hey, we're sick of getting just $175,000 because Rice would go to Fayetteville, and they'd bring 400 fans, and they get $175,000. Arkansas didn't like that. And, of course, that caused more infighting. Money always does. And along the way, you know, obviously I discussed the cheating part. Obviously, SMU got the death penalty. But 7 of the 9 were on probation in a 3-year span. And, you know, it wasn't like they weren't innovative with the wishbone and fun and that they won. They won 5 national titles over the years. They had 5 Heisman Trophy winners. But the backbiting just got too much. And finally, Ken Hatfield, who had been at Arkansas And they actually done a really good job at Arkansas. Took suddenly out of nowhere. Now, this is an Arkansas grad. Took the Clemson job. And it was like, well, he took the Clemson job. Because I think he was hearing that Arkansas was going to try and get out of the Southwest Conference, go to the SEC. Jack Crow took over as the head coach. And the legendary coach, Frank Broyles, who led Arkansas to the 1964 national title with, yes, Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson as two of his players, went to Jack Crow and he said, hey, Jack, what do you think, you know, about us going to the SEC? And Crow looked at him. He said, you see Texas with everything they got? He goes, oh, yeah, Texas has a lot. He says, the SEC has five of those. Well, they still win anyway. And that started the dominoes. Now, that was 91. The Southwest Conference lasted another 5 years. And that was it. That started the dominoes. This is how bad the backfighting was in the Southwest Conference. Texas and Texas A&M 25 years ago today were supposed to play the last game at 3:30. And Rice and Houston were so mad about it, they scheduled their game at 4 so they could be last. Yeah, the old Southwest Conference where you felt like, especially with all that oil money in the 80s, you felt like it was the conference where anything goes. All right, let's bring in Nate Bauer now, Blue White Illustrated. Nate, welcome. I know we can't talk short game today. We're going to talk some football, basketball.
How we doing? What's going on?
I'm doing well. They point me toward the field or court, and I talk. It's a good life.
I like it. It's a good strategy. Keep up with it. You know, feel like you got a future if you stick with it.
I'm hanging in. So we'll start with the football part of it. When you watch, to me, the most important part of what happened on Saturday is what they didn't do. They didn't turn the ball over. And I think the dominoes fall into place easier when that happens.
So what I've been thinking of since the game is amateur tennis. And right. do you know the rule of amateur tennis is you're not going to hit winners, but don't hit unforced errors, right? If you just keep the ball in play, you're going to do pretty well in amateur tennis because people just don't hit winners. Well, that's how I feel about the Big Ten this year, is if you don't hit unforced errors, if you don't lose the game, you got a pretty good chance of winning. And I know that is the stupidest thing I could have possibly said, but it's true. If you are not proactively losing, you're going to have a pretty good chance against most of the teams that you're going to play in this league this season.
Well, and I've likened it to the baseline. I actually have used the tennis analogy before. The baseline tennis player just keeps returning like a wall, bang, bang, yep, bang, and then all of a sudden you get impatient, and then you try to do something and you make an error.
Yep, and it's been the story the entire season that for a variety of factors, right? But the largest one is Penn State gets behind in a game, and then the pressure's on, and they play that way. They play like a team who has to make up ground, and when you feel like you have to make up ground, more often than not, you're gonna put yourself into inopportune positions, and it allows for the opponent to exploit you at the same time. If an opponent knows what you're going to do because you're forced into that situation based on time and circumstance in the game, it makes the job that much easier. So the fact that Penn State was able to take a lead and then keep it, right? I mean, just be able to keep Michigan at arm's length for the majority of that game. And not make mistakes in the process. That's the recipe. That's how you win.
Oh, what did you think of? And now you've had a chance to see him for six games. What do you think about the development and the style of play of Kevon Lee?
Yeah, I mean, I like him. I think it's interesting. He would have played anyway this year, I think, right? But just under totally different circumstances, and that's what James Franklin, I feel like, has been saying the entire season. Is it's not that any of these guys aren't good, right? Any of these younger players aren't good. It's that they're being forced into larger roles. It's not the coaching staff picking and choosing what the right circumstances are to get these guys those early career reps. It's, look, there's no other choice. This is the situation, and you know, ready or not, you're going to have to go out there and perform to the best of your ability. So I think that what happened on Saturday was, to a certain extent, a simplification of what they were doing, and that opened the door for him to have that type of success. I mean, he's big, and he's, I'm echoing Franklin here, but he's big and he falls forward. Yeah. You know, and he broke some tackles, which has been a rarity this season from that position. It's all of those things combined give you a chance to have some success.
All right, so you're watching warm up, and when you look at the running backs warm up, it is Keziah Holmes, Kevon Lee, Joe Bruno. Okay. In fact, I pointed out to Jack, there's the group, because I knew Devin Ford wasn't on the trip. And then you're watching the corners warm up, and the ones that were actively warming up were Deshaun Hardy and Joey Porter Jr. and Marquise Wilson and nobody else. To play the game, especially when you're playing as much nickel as you have to during the course of a game, I thought that was actually a pretty good performance by those three guys.
Yeah, no question. It helped. I think that Michigan has a train wreck on its hands at quarterback. That doesn't take anything away from those guys. They did the job that they had to do. But
Be honest with you, I got what I expected at quarterback. I mean, he knows. In doing the show last week, hey, McNamara, this against Rutgers. I said this is what I didn't see. There was a bunch of stuff I didn't see in the Rutgers game.
Well, and he got hurt. He got hurt early in that game, and you could see him working on his shoulder, and he didn't have it the rest of the way. And then, Milton is short-arming passes, right? I mean, they're hitting the ground 5 yards before the route ends. So, that created, again, just an advantageous circumstance for them to be able to succeed in that situation, because otherwise, it's not just those two positions. Linebackers, they got problems. Yeah. It is just the larger story of this season is it's surprising because it's not COVID, but the attrition is just—it's unspeakable. I don't know that I've seen anything like it in terms of being this affected by injuries and opt-outs and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just that they've been hurt in a lot of key places on this team this year.
And I'll be honest with you, I watch Michigan play. I don't see a lot of team speed with the current group. I mean, what struck me was normally I see a Michigan team, they can run. They have a few guys that can, but I just felt overall they don't have that same amount of speed as I've seen in the past. And it's just with the current group.
Yeah, they got problems on their hands there in a variety of ways. I mean, it just for as much as Penn State appeared to be and was a talking point of, did Franklin lose the team, or are they trying anymore? And I think that was a relevant conversation for the Maryland game. But since, even at Nebraska, even at times against Iowa, they kept coming. They were at least out there playing. I don't know if exactly the same can be said of Michigan right now.
What kind of job has Greg Schiano done at Rutgers to this point in a short period of time?
Yeah, playing hard. I mean, right? Like, yeah. It's funny because we do a right. So our website is part of a network of which every basically big time school has a website, right? And so we do a question swap, and the guy. who runs the Rutgers site responded to my questions, and you know, it's total optimism. It, you know, they feel good about it. You know, it's not necessarily the pieces that they're excited about as much as it is the foundation, yeah. Right? Just the culture and the style of play and the things that he wants to do and getting those guys to buy in. If you look statistically, Rutgers isn't having a great year.
Right? No. In fact, you look statistically, they're not far off numbers-wise from where they were going into the Penn State game last year.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost like that four-game losing streak isn't relevant, right? I mean, they lost a bunch of games, yeah. Bookended by, you know, a win to start the season and a win last week against Purdue. You know, but they're not a sexy team, you know, but that doesn't matter, right? Especially in this season, what matters is who wants to play, who's going to keep coming, who's playing hard all the time, and Rutgers is doing that. They're doing some innovative and word you want to use, right? But offensively, they're trying things. They're trying to help them win the game. And so, you know, you got to give credit where it's due. And for Greg Schiano, he seems to be able to inject that into that program, and that's what he's done this season.
Well, I'll give you two good examples from the Michigan game for Rutgers. Old Rutgers, when Giles Jackson returned the second half kickoff for a touchdown, would have folded like a house of cards.
Yep.
Instead, the ensuing drive, they took the kickoff, drove 75 yards, got the touchdown back. Okay, yep. That showed me something. Right. Then, down 8 late in regulation, old Rutgers would have gone 4 and out, folded like a house of cards, and that would have been it. Instead, they drove down, they got the touchdown and the 2-point conversion, forced overtime. Well, yeah, they lost in triple overtime, but those two things told me something, that it's just a different ball game for them.
Yeah, and I think that you can look, like, moral victories, it's trite, and I get it. But this, in a lot of ways, this is a foundational year for almost every program.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
right.
That is what it is. And so I understand that from the broader perspective, people want to look. And just as an aside here, everybody's been saying this in an undertone kind of way throughout the year, but everybody wants it to be normal, and it's not. It's not normal. Right. Nothing about this college football season is normal. Mm-hmm. It is a train wreck. It is messy. It is all of those things. And so this idea that the college football playoff and a Big Ten championship and those things are dictating the tone of the season, that's only true for one team in the Big Ten. That's only true for a handful of teams in all of college football. And so the other side of it is, what are the teams that aren't part of that conversation doing right now? And if you're competitive, if you've gotten to this point in the season, you're into December, if you're competitive and you're going out there and you are showing improvements from week to week, you're laying the foundation for next year. You're laying the foundation for when things do start to return to some sense of normalcy.
Well, Penn State will play basketball against VCU. A week ago, they were supposed to open with Drexel. They're still working on getting a date that works for the two to make that game up. Dick Girardi got as far as Kelly's.
Oh, wow. Poor guy.
I'm talking about the day before, and he got a text from somebody saying they're not going to play tomorrow. So he had to turn. So now he's put in a new policy. He doesn't show up until the day of the game. I think that's a smart policy.
Yeah, wait until 30 minutes before. You're fine. Yeah,
they shook off some rust. At least they've got a game under their belt. What does that at least mean moving forward? That at least now they have a game after not having any scrimmages or a preseason game or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, Jim Ferry had a press conference yesterday, and look, like, it's the elephant in the room. These guys have dealt with a lot of stuff
Yep.
over the last 8 weeks, And so, you know, all of the talking points of preseason football, right? You're hitting yourself, and you're just waiting for somebody else to hit. Well, that's true of basketball too. I mean, these guys have only seen each other. Like, I cannot possibly. It's not just that I can't explain it. I don't understand it myself. These guys only see each other. That's it. There is no student body. There is no external socialization. They're only seeing each other. And so for all of the stuff that happened, in October with Pat Chambers, for preseason, et cetera, to finally get into the groove of game week, of having games at some type of regular interval, it starts that process. It starts that process of being able to put those things aside and play the game. Do what you love to do. And, you know, this schedule, right, I don't know how much it's going to prepare them for Virginia Tech, and Seton Hall, obviously. But
who knows?
Look, they're getting games in, and that's what's important right now.
Well, here's another element that I brought this up with Will Levis and Brent Strange. You know, look, whatever happens at quarterback club stays at quarterback club. I got that, but this is very benign. I asked each of them, "What's it been like to take class?" Because Levis is a 3.99. Right, yeah. 3-3. He got an A minus on his first ever English class at Penn State, because he started out with a C minus on his first paper, and then he got A's and everything else. He couldn't make it up. He got to an A minus.
Okay. Slacker,
yeah,
unbelievable.
Okay. So I asked each of them, "What's it been like to try and negotiate classes on Zoom?" Because that's all the student athletes are allowed to do. They can't, in order to maintain the bubble, they got to be in Zoom. And to be honest with you, they did not. I mean, they were like, this has been hard for them to do this. I mean, Levis, for example, Will says he has 18 credits.
I mean,
and you got to wake up every day, go to a computer, and, oh, wait a minute, that's your life.
It's not that bad.
It's for all of them, basketball, football players, they're trying to play games and are also trying to take classes, and a lot of them aren't comfortable doing it this way.
Yeah, and I think that you're seeing ramifications of that. I think that you're seeing guys not have – look, the way that football is run, right, particularly under the direction of James Franklin, it's about normalcy and discipline and routine, like all of those things. This is such a departure from that. I just think that, even when you feel like you're in a groove, there's so much uncertainty attached to everything that it's hard to ever get there. It's hard to ever maintain a groove, it's all of it. It's not just football that they're dealing with these weird, adjustments that they have to make. It's in every facet of their lives. I think that has an effect. It's undeniable.
I think it's something that I think it's an element people haven't talked about. And now I taught my class in person, and to be honest with you, the students will be the first ones to tell you, like all the other ones, they didn't benefit at all. All right. So, although I did do Zoom on Monday with them, because we had to, I brought Mark Zumoff in from the Sixers to talk with him.
So bingo.
That was good. All right.
He's pro's pro.
Oh, he's fabulous, and he was great with them. He was great. Sir, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. I apologize we did not get to talking about tips to help with the short game. We'll do that the next
worst
time.
Worst part of my game. Worst part of my game. It's terrible. And I've got an entire off season of snow to think about it.
Orange golf balls.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's an optimistic outlook. I like it.
You know me. Everyone says I'm the eternal optimist. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it, Nate.
All right. See ya.